says it's 11, so. I love that. Nice down to the wire. Abigail, no, Christine. No, I was right, Abigail. Yeah, okay. Ariana. Saisha. Marcos. Travis. He's back. John. He's back. Kayla is not here. Morgan. Absent again. And Chris is here. Alright, before I get rolling, I'm going to take a little bit of executive privilege just to remind you all of the significance of today. None of you are alive 24 years ago, I assume. And even if you were, you don't remember what happened on that day. But that was a day that changed the course of human history forever. Four planes were taken over by a bunch of Islamic terrorists who sought to bring jihad to the shores of the United States. It was a Tuesday morning, kind of like today. I remember this, it was sunny. I don't remember if it was hot, but it was a nice day. And beginning at approximately, I think it was 8:43 in the morning, one by one, three targets were hit and one was a miscue. Planes struck each of the towers of the World Trade Center. Another plane went into the Pentagon. Another plane was downed by the passengers in the field in Pennsylvania. That started what would be a change in our country, in which the country itself reflected on many of the freedoms that Americans had taken for granted. And we started accepting the reality that there are bad people willing to use our freedoms against us. Beginning on that day, a series of events began in which the powers of the federal government began to rise as the powers of the states in order to prevent a repeat of what took place. And by the way, for those of you who don't know history, it was only the second time in the history of the United States that a foreign enemy had struck on our continent. Thousands of people died who just went to work. Hundreds of firefighters, policemen, also died when the towers collapsed. And that started a nearly 20-year span of what were known as the Wars on Terrorism, in which hundreds of thousands of Americans were deployed overseas. Nearly 7,000 of them died, including one of my friends, died in Afghanistan. And of those who came back, there isn't a veteran who has not been impacted. They're still not suffering because of the things that they saw. So, if you're sitting around and you think your life is tough, think about those families that lost a loved one on that day. And
and just try to understand what makes it significant.
Similarly, we also had another bad thing happen yesterday. A political activist by the name of Charlie Kirk, while on a college campus to speak to students your age, was shot in the neck by an assassin. Apparently they found the gun, and it looks like whoever the shooter was an activist also. I'm not gonna go any more into any details that I heard because, again, the problem with making judgments when news stories just begin is that they're often wrong. But let's just say, I don't care what your politics are. The idea of killing somebody else because you may disagree with them, that's as un-American as you can.
The U.S. government does that all the time.
What?
Like, they assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. They, like,
prove it. Prove it was the United States government.
There are, like, open CIA files that...
I don't want to do that. I really don't want to do that. Because, again, it's not been substantiated.
Well, there's also, like, you could consider, like, the Mexican-American War, pretty much any war in the United States.
Listen, if you want to be like that, you have a right to be that. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. As far as what we were I will talk to you about something, though. Ariana's the first student out of the group that sent me their topic for the paper. She sent me something, and I did what I will do when all of you send me your topics by Friday, which is when they're due. She sent me her idea, and I just asked a couple of questions. When she follows up on it, I may be inclined to approve her topic. I just need a little more clarification. Remember I said on the first day of class, you can write about anything you want so long as it's related to state and local government. And if you can basically tell me how it is, I will approve it. So please do not forget, because I do not have a chance to send out a reminder tonight because I have to meet with two clients and I'm participating in a 9/11 remembrance ceremony. And then tomorrow I'm going to be at the Big E all day tomorrow signing veterans up, hopefully, to join the American Legion. So I'm putting it on you. Almost everybody's here except, I think, for one person. So please don't forget. All right. We were talking about the type of government that we have in our country. The fact that we do not have a democracy, the reason being is the Founding Fathers studied history and they saw what democracies do. They have a tendency to kill themselves. Because in a pure democracy, a direct democracy, a majority can do whatever they want to the minority. The people who, and by the way, we're not talking racial or religious. If you're in the majority, this means you're for something. And if you're in the minority, that means you're against it. Well, one of the things that the Athenians would do, and I gave you the example of ostracism. In Athens, if you voted against what the majority wanted, and you pushed, you persisted, they literally would vote to kick you out of Athens for 10 years. So our founders looked at that and they realized, you know something? We don't want people making decisions of going to war, or taxes, or who should be a citizen, or who should be own land. Because people are greedy. They will vote only in their self-interests. So then what are we going to do? We're not going to have a monarchy. No, instead they look to Plato for guidance. And in Plato's Republic, he called or devised what is known as the Politeia, which was based on the Spartan system, in which an enlightened few were given all power over the lives of every citizen. And those enlightened few, he called them philosopher kings, would have the authority to ultimately, because of their wisdom, do what was right for the people. Now, granted, if you know what I think I said, if you know anything about Spartan society, yeah, it was equal, all right. But the founders realized if you can't trust one and you can't trust all, well, we got to trust some. So they created our republic. They did not want life tenure like Plato talked about. Instead, they said, no, let's have these election things. And the people who get into these positions via the elections, we'll give them the authority to govern on our behalf. Again, we talked about why the Founding Fathers were this. I referenced Federalist number 10, because Madison does a good job in laying it out. And of course, I also told you a little bit about, you know, what they would view our society to be if they came forward today. Essentially, they would sit back and say, hey, you know something? You kind of got it right, but you're wrong in the parties. Instead of voting partisanship, Democrats, Republicans, you should vote for the best person who is dedicated to the most people. So, if you are told we live in a democracy, we do not. Instead, to be precise, we live in a republic. That is a federal union comprised of 50 sovereign states and I think 5 territories. All right, that's where I left off. I'll give you a little bit of a review. Now, FYI, our state is also a republic. We have a state government where we elect people to make the laws for the state, but power is divided between the state government and the 351 cities and towns that make up Massachusetts. Although as soon as Devens gets its act together again, we'll be up to 352. It's not quite there yet. But when John Adams wrote our Constitution, he did not call us a republic. He referred to us as a commonwealth. What's the difference? What's the difference between a republic and a commonwealth?
Doesn't that have something to do with like the way the laws are like shaped?
What do you mean?
Because it's like kind of the commonwealth is like our laws are shaped by previous.
Oh, you're thinking common law.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Common law.
Yeah,
that's our court system. But past practices definitely were influential in the minds of John Adams. You know, when he created our system and gave the different branches specific powers, he didn't, like, reinvent the wheel. Yes?
If I remember correctly, didn't you say that our Constitution is the oldest?
Our Constitution is the oldest.
The word republic in that term hadn't been made up yet.
No, republic was there. It was references to like the Roman Republic.
Okay, but in that term of the society,
yeah.
Do you think that they just used commonwealth as a different term instead of republic?
That's exactly what they did. Because essentially a commonwealth, if you actually look at Plato's meaning, the public realm, that's exactly what the commonwealth is. It's a government designed for the people and to treat everyone the same. So all the rules apply in common. The only difference is respublica is Latin. Commonwealth is Old English. But essentially it's the same thing. I like your analysis. That was good. That was good. That was clever. All right. Next up, another phrase that I think you see in chapter 1. Is the phrase constitutionalism. As much as those elected officials may want to, our positions of government, our legislative branch, our executive branch, our judicial branch, are ultimately controlled by a piece of paper called the Constitution. And these constitutions, and again, I'll keep it plural, because remember, we have a constitution for the U.S. government, and we have a constitution for every single state. These constitutions tell the government what it can, and in some instances, cannot do to us, we the people. In the minds of the founding fathers, this was like the rule book. And if, say, for instance, the legislature could pass tax law, then tax law should be made by the legislature, not the courts. Or if the courts were given the authority to adjudicate disputes under the law, the executive, be it the president or the governor, should never intervene. The idea was to literally put it in black and white, although granted it was tan parchment and ink quill, but the idea was to put it down on paper so that way everybody could see. Which, by the way, is not only an ancient Greek concept, but it's also a Roman context as well. Because that's what the ancient Athenians did. They had all of their laws posted in the middle of the city for everyone to see. As did the Romans. But ultimately, the Constitution was to be the barrier. Government can do A, B, C. But because it does not mention D, E, F, the government cannot do those. But in our federal system, we actually have overlapping. Not only are these constitutions the rules by which the governments can operate, but there is, we're going to see, are specific instances in the U.S. Constitution that says things that the states can't do or that the federal government can't do to the states. It's just as similar as in the state constitutions. There's references to certain authority they'll give up to the national government, but there's also references where they won't, where they retain what's known as sovereign or sometimes police powers. But in an ideal world, no level of government will overstep. Now, unfortunately, just because that was the way it was designed over the nearly 250 years our government has been operating, there has been some shenanigans. There has been corruption. There have been multiple efforts to fudge the restrictions along the way. And we're going to cover a little bit of that when we go into the evolution of federalism, hopefully beginning today. But we'll see how we go. Ultimately, I already said this, Constitution is the rules for government. Ultimately, we will always have a republic, despite what the politicians say, or your high school teachers say, or maybe some of your other professors. We will always have a republic. Why? Because the Constitution literally says so. Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution guarantees, and I quote, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive against domestic violence." One of the primary jobs of the U.S. government is to protect the state governments and make sure they have a republic or a commonwealth. Like Massachusetts or Virginia. Pennsylvania also. Kentucky. There are a couple other commonwealths, but not
that. Alright, did you have a question in the back?
No.
Oh, I thought I saw your hand going up.
I didn't, but I decided against it.
Okay. You sure?
Yes.
Now would be a good time.
I'm all set.
Alright. Anyone else have any questions?
What do states have other than the commonwealth?
They refer to themselves as states. Pretty much like the state of New York.
You called all four of them: Pennsylvania, Virginia, Massachusetts, and Kentucky.
Look at that.
there's so much stuff in here, like filed away in drawers, like the back of a file cabinet. And every now and then a factoid comes up. Thank you. Made me feel good. Did that answer your question? They just literally refer to themselves as states. The sovereign state, things along those lines.
Yeah.
Any other? All right. So what is government supposed to do? Well, it really depends upon the jurisdiction, truth be told. Really depends on the jurisdiction. So to keep it simple, on a national level, the primary job of the United States government is to ensure the survival of the United States of America. How does that work? Well, the United States government is authorized to engage in warfare, to kill those who would seek to do the nation harm. They're also entrusted to defend the homeland from enemies both foreign and domestic. So, if you have an American that seeks to do harm against other Americans, the United States government has full constitutional authority to essentially make them cease to be. The government also has an obligation to ensure there's an economy and that goods can flow throughout all of the states. Of course, you literally can see it in the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System. And yes, the government is authorized to keep illegal immigrants out. Why? Well, because you don't know who they are. If someone here comes here legally, you know, have you ever talked to anybody who became a citizen through the immigration process? It takes like a decade. It takes tens of thousands of dollars. But you know what happens in that process? They get their background verified. We know who they are. We know where they came from. We know what they did in their home country. Because sometimes there are people, and you can see it throughout history, that invade other countries by walking across the border.
The United States?
What?
The United States?
What?
Like the Mexican American rule, like Texas used to be an American, Mexican territory.
They seceded and they became an independent country. And then they petitioned the United States to come in.
Yes, but like, the United States is the result of a country invading someone else's land. And there's also a lot of U.S. There's been a lot of U.S. intervention in South America, so that's part of why that region is very unstable. Like, the U.S. government has funded a lot of paramilitary groups that, like, destabilize, I want to say Venezuela, for example, because the country wanted to, like, have their own oil belong to the government of that country instead of selling it to the United States.
Yeah, so like, for example, in Venezuela, the government implemented a socialist system where the state took private property that were owned by other interests. Well, it's in the interest of the United States. Job of the United States government is to protect our economy.
I think the priority should be to protect...
Again, I don't want to be disrespectful. I'm just laying out there. Constitution says the obligation of the U.S. government is to protect the interests of the United States. If we disagree on it, that's fine. That's not a problem. But at the end of the day, the government is doing what the government's supposed to do to protect us.
I just kind of think it's, like, ingenuous to demonize illegal immigrants from, like, across the border once the United States has made their region very unstable and so dangerous. Like, they want to come here because ideally the United States won't use those kinds of tactics on the
United States. I didn't demonize them. I didn't say they were all bad people. All I said is that we have a legal immigration process so that way their backgrounds can be scrutinized. If you simply let someone walk into your house, do you have a house? Do you own a house? Do your parents own a house? Do they let random people walk in off the street? Mm-hmm. Or do they only let people in they know?
But they didn't steal someone else's house.
We didn't steal anyone else's house. We
We took it through the legitimate means that countries grow, that has been used by human civilization throughout all time.
War?
The weaker civilization always beats the, the stronger civilization always beats the weaker.
And so, the weaker people shouldn't be angry about it?
It doesn't matter. Again, I'm not trying to be offensive. History is written by the winners. What happens to the losers of war is irrelevant. Like, are we shedding any tears for the Nazis? Are we shedding any tears for the imperialist Japanese?
Well, the United States did kind of help Operation Paperclip whenever they, recruited a bunch of Nazi scientists.
That was after the fact. We took them so that way we could strengthen us against the Russians. But again, we're getting way down a rabbit hole, and you're missing the point. All I said, and I don't want to debate every single incident that's ever happened in American history with you. All I said was that in our Constitution, our U.S. government is granted the authority to protect the interests of the United States. And as I also said, if you disagree, that's fine. That's your right. You have the freedom to disagree. But it's not wrong.
I suppose it's just that the interests of the United States can be interpreted in a lot of different ways.
Again, that's your opinion. You're right. And it can be interpreted in a whole bunch of ways. I agree with you 100%. But this is not a history class. All I'm trying to do is just give you an overview of what the government does. Any other questions? All right. On a state level, state government also has obligations. Local level as well. On a state level, the job of the state government is to make policy and provide services which the people want. For instance, public schools. Massachusetts was one of the first states to implement a public school system because the people elected officials demanding the creation of public schools. So it's the job of the government of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to ensure the means to provide public education. States also are entrusted with having policies to potentially provide for health and human services. For example, to make sure the water is clean. To make sure that houses have the ability to have adequate sewerage systems. They're also entrusted to have public spaces for public use, such as parks and playgrounds. And they're also obligated to prevent crime. When one person makes the intentional decision to do harm to another person, all of the common law crimes, murder, rape, arson, larceny, those are all policed by the state governments. But in Massachusetts, in some of the states, I don't know if it's most of the states, but some of the states all have policing power down at the local level. So in Massachusetts, as far as I know, just about every single town either has their own police department, their own fire department, their own school system, or they're part of a regional system. So maybe they combine resources with neighboring communities. So, national government, Constitution says national issues. But the states pretty much take care of everything else. Like the roads. The roads are to be maintained by the states. The trees. Make sure there's not dead trees falling in the roads. Granted, Mother Nature. And there's so many trees, you can't cut them all down. But you know, that's the job of the municipality. But what all three levels can do is limited by capacity. This is a huge problem.
In your textbook, in chapter 1, the authors define capacity as, and I quote, the government's ability to respond effectively to change, to make decisions efficiently and responsively, and to manage conflict.
In other words, the government can only do so much. Because what allows the government to do anything? Anybody know? What is the fuel that fires the cylinders of government?
Not exactly sure, but us.
How us?
Well, a couple things. We pay for a lot of national... We pay taxes.
There you go. You got it right there. You're right. We are to make a comparison or analogy to... I'm going to run blackout. I'll think about it. The Matrix. We are the human batteries that power our government. The government literally is piped into your wallets, and your government has a right to take from you your fruits of labor. And it uses the fruits of your labor to provide those services. Now, to what extent? Well, again, to go high level, well, based on the consent of the people. We allow the government to take from us whatever we ultimately say is the limit. So, for example, there are communities in Massachusetts that have spent themselves to the brink of deficits, and they are contemplating what is commonly referred to as Prop 2.5 overrides. Under state law, a town can only increase property taxes by 2.5%. But if the town's expenses exceed the revenue, towns have one of two choices. Either to cut staff, to cancel services, or to go to the residents and look for an override. But of course, the choice is up to those people who go to town meeting. If town meeting authorizes the override, property taxes will be adjusted and will go up the next fiscal year. If the people reject the override, the budget remains the same, and the only way the town can balance the budget is through layoffs or termination of services. My first year serving on the school committee was 2009, I think is when I got on the school committee. It might have been 2010. But one of the first decisions that I got to experience was helping our school system balance its budget. Over the next 3 years, we managed to balance our budget by laying off 23 full-time employees. Because the state cut funding to the towns. In fact, interestingly enough, in my town of Sutton, state funding still has not reached the level today in 2025 as what we received in 2003. So, because of the state having other priorities, municipalities are forced to make do with what they can get.
That's capacity.
That's capacity. So again, remember, the government can only do what we allow it to do. And there is always a point when we say, no, you're taking too much. Because, while none of you may care, because you're all young, and you're just beginning your potential of making salaries, you have in every single community, I don't want to say a majority, but a sizable percentage, who are retirees, and they're living on fixed incomes. And I'll tell you one thing, as being a local politician, going to people's houses and having conversations when they tell me, look, I love the schools, I love the kids, but I can't afford for my taxes to go up, because as it is, I'm making decisions between paying my water bill and buying food. So, just like you all will one day have your own budget, and you will have a capacity on what you can spend. The same is true with the towns. Now, we do have problems, though. And this is your generation is going to get rolled over by it big time. Our state government, by law, also has to have a balanced budget. Meaning, it's not allowed to do deficit spending. It can't spend more than it has the means to take in. But that's not true in all states. California, for example, they just keep spending and spending and spending and spending, and they have a deficit in the tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars. I don't know exactly what California's current deficit is. And the same is true on the national government. There was an attempt during the 90s to pass a balanced budget amendment, but that never got out of Congress. So as a result, I don't know what the federal debt is, but it's something like $36, $37 trillion. Guess who's going to have to pay that bill?
Us.
Yeah, because I'm going to be dead. So that is ultimately the challenge. The government can do only what it can do. Because we are the batteries. And if the government takes too much from us, well, don't forget how our country was founded. Our country was founded because the crown, His Majesty's government, imposed taxes on us that we didn't feel were justified. So we, the people, rebelled.
Didn't Nepal, I believe it was Nepal's younger generation, just uprise against their government and overthrow a lot of them?
Yeah. Same thing is happening in France. There's a huge, I would not be surprised in the next decade we didn't see another revolution in France. Because the French government is rolling the people over. It's bad. Because after all, that's all socialism does. It sucks money off the people. And eventually it takes all the money away. And raises the standards of living. Raises the expenses. And by the way, you can smile. Talk to someone who came here from Cuba. They'll tell you how wonderful socialism is. All right, what was I saying there? I kind of went into that, you know, what the national government can do. It can just keep spending. States, local, mostly have to have balanced budgets. I've already told you this. Constitution says, by law, have to have balanced budget. Covered that as well. All right, here's the next fun one. Here is the next fun one. And this is the one from which all political debates derive. And again, remember, your politics is just your opinion. And your opinion is as valid as mine. And we can disagree, and that's okay. But we should not be to the point where we're disagreeable. How does the government decide what it's going to spend our money on? Politics. The major issue, and if you put all the issues into one pot and make them as simplified and streamlined as possible, the major divide between the people most who consider themselves conservatives and those who consider themselves as liberals is where does the government spend its money? What are the spending priorities? And the battle is culture. Do we build up our military? Do we build up our police? Do we build up psychiatric treatment? Do we have more welfare? Do we have free education? That is the battlefield, that is our political arena. Because there are people, for whatever issue is, that are for and against it.
But here is the challenge.
How do we get to a place where we're able to do things? Well, this is a lost art in our society today. And I blame both the people who have the R's after their name as well as the D's. In my lifetime, I've seen the partisanship become so severe, there's no longer even efforts to compromise. If a Democrat comes up with an idea, all the Democrats rally around it. But because it's a Democrat idea, the Republicans say it must be wrong. And vice versa. There's no attempt to reach across the aisle. Yeah, you have those ones and twos, those politicians. And by the way, if you hear a politician seeming like they're reaching across the aisle, it's because they're probably afraid of their next election cycle.
When was the last time that happened?
Fetterman, the senator from Pennsylvania who suffered the stroke. I've been listening to a lot. I granted, he's very hard to understand, but again, his brain isn't functioning, so it's really interesting. He can able to communicate by putting his thoughts on iPad, so he can read visually. But if you say something to him, his brain isn't been able to process it. But if you've been listening to him, since Trump has got elected, he is on the Democrat side, saying basically, look, we got to work with Republicans. And there have been Republicans in the past that have done the same thing, but again, they're few and far between. They're few and far between. Because instead, now you have hyper-partisans. You have people like the Squad, Alexandria Cortez, the representative from Boston, Rashid Tlaib, these far left extremists on one side, and they're going against the far right extremists, like the Marjorie Taylor Greens or the short little one from Colorado. I can't remember her name. But literally, there's no effort to do this. You know, hey, shake my hand. Let's see if we can talk. It's all just hyper-partisanship.
Do you have any examples of, like, extremist policy from both sides? Like, what, like, an extremist, like, policy that someone like Margaret Taylor Greene...
Defund the police and all gun laws.
And then what would the equivalent be?
Well, I gave you the left wing, which would be defund the police, and I gave you the extreme right wing, end all gun laws.
Like, gun restriction laws?
And
all gun laws. Anything dealing with guns. Well, again, I've heard Republicans on one side saying we need to get rid of all gun laws. I don't necessarily agree with that. But I also don't agree with defunding the police, which I heard a lot of Democrats talking about. So there's an example of the policy from both sides.
Were AOC, was she proposing that? Or was that like
she was completely involved when the Summer of Love was going on. She was well entrenched in the defund the police movement. Also, and ICE... she's taken that position as well.
And that you think is like extremist leftist?
Yeah, we need to have an immigration and customs agency.
Can I actually, so we were talking about due process last class. So there's a lot right now, ICE is like disregarding due process. So that's been on my mind when we're talking about like, the Constitution and like how it functions and like things that the government is not allowed to do.
So if you go back and you read case law that's come down from the Supreme Court has ruled that illegal immigrants do not have the same standards of constitutional protections as American citizens.
The Supreme Court has also ruled that police aren't required to protect citizens.
That's very true.
There's also like legal citizens.
But that's the law.
There's also like the legal citizens.
So what ends up happening is once they're taken into custody, we had this conversation on the first day of class. Their backgrounds are reviewed, and they're assessed as to whether or not they're actually in danger or not. And if they're not, then eventually they're released.
I've just been curious about like the implications of that, like with the Constitution, and like if due process.
Our government has always done that. You just never seen it. You know who was one of the biggest deporters in recent history?
Obama.
Obama.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely.
And they did the same thing. The only difference was is the media didn't follow the ICE agents around and broadcast.
Well, they also didn't put the legal immigrants
she was talking.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'd love to hear what she was saying.
They also didn't put illegal immigrants in concentration camps.
Well, that's a means to holding them because they're catching so many criminals.
But also,
what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Put an illegal immigrant in the general population in a jail? They could get killed in there. And then what would happen? Because do you think all of the gangbangers and all the people that are in, you know, maximum high capacity, high crime prison cells, do you think they're going to put up with those
guys?
That's
better than a concentration camp.
Getting shanked is better than a concentration camp?
Yes, because in a concentration camp, it's like...
What, they're getting clothes, they're getting food, they're getting clean water.
Well, Alligator Alcatraz specifically was built on a swamp, which has a lot of diseases. That's a bunch of people in close proximity, no medical care, the food is rotten, the heat, there's no air conditioning, no nothing, it was essentially just a tent. Mosquitoes are huge vectors of disease. Mosquitoes live in swamps.
So you do realize that there are prisons in Florida that are in the same condition as that?
Yes.
So you think illegal immigrants should get a higher standard of protection than American citizens who are incarcerated?
No, I think that all prisoners should have better standards of living.
All we got to do is keep them alive under the law. Those are the standards under the law.
So my question was just, so if we have governmental agencies that are disregarding parts of the Constitution, like due process, which are like foundational government...
I can tell you they're not.
Well, no, they are.
I can tell you they're not. I know there are activists out there claiming it.
No, but
I can tell you they're not.
No, but there are cases
because
of people that has happened.
And there are always accountability. And if it's an American citizen who has had their rights trampled upon or due process violated, they have the ability to sue the government agency and get lots of money.
I haven't been able to get my question out yet. Whatever people's like opinions, right, there can be like subjective ideological opinions on what is happening, though. But just looking at like the face value of it, it seems like there's being a lot of reinterpretations of the Constitution that is changing, right? The Constitution and its meaning, the meanings of things like due process are being created, being turned really malleable.
Hold on.
Okay.
Give me one second. Went off on me. Because again, I have a feeling we're going to get on tangents. But wait, it's almost there. Rewind the tape. What did I just say when I put that click up there?
Okay.
Politics, you're right. There have been, but again, that's politics. Because there are people that want absolutely no illegal immigration. And there are people who want all illegal immigration.
Yes, so I understand there's polarities of the issue.
And the sad thing is when Biden was president, he intentionally passed an executive order not to follow the majority of the immigration laws that have been on the books for decades. But then you had Trump come in and do the exact opposite. Remember what he said? Hyperpartisanship. I've addressed it.
So my question was that if there are governmental institutions or agencies that are redefining areas of the Constitution like due process, how do you go against that and say, well, no, I'm for due process? How is that far leftism, like extremism? I'm just curious on like how that line is drawn.
I am saying is that the example that I use, and again,
uh-huh.
We're going down on lots of rabbit holes, and it's going
to
be a long... I know.
I'd like to understand the process.
I get you. The people like the squad said to get rid of ICE completely.
Well, I mean, it was established in 2003.
To get rid of ICE completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequence of that is then we would have no ability to monitor our borders. And yes, there was a lot of agencies created in the wake of 9/11. That was part of the Homeland Security readjustment. Because we realized we were not protecting our borders. So the Democrats, some Democrats, mostly Republicans, when George Bush was president, passed those regulations and laws that allowed the creation of ICE for the sole purpose of protecting our borders. So, what makes that, okay, then fine. What makes getting rid of all gun laws right wing? If anything, it should be a centrist position. Because what does the Constitution say?
Like the Second Amendment?
Yeah, what does the Second Amendment say?
Well, I think it's considering leftism and like,
No. She is saying the fact that I said that defund the police was a left wing. She challenged me on that. And I'm challenging my own assertion that getting rid of...
That's not my challenge.
All right.
My challenge was specifically about due process. And I was saying how ICE is violating due process right now. And we can disagree on that.
But I'll tell you, statutorily, they're not. They are actually enforcing all of the immigration laws that are on the books to the T.
That's not necessarily good.
I'm not saying it is. When did I say anything that I said I agree with? I'm just telling you the facts. And you can disagree with the facts, but they're not wrong.
I'm not trying to disagree with anything. I had a question about what we're learning applied to current events.
All I was trying to do was give you an example. And if we're having problems with examples, I won't give you examples. I'm just trying to use ideas that I know are in the news to be an example to help you get context of what I'm saying in class. That's all. That's all it is.
That's politics.
Is it? So it's just like Trump is using executive powers to protect the people, right?
That's what he's claiming, yes.
And it's in terms of...
I'll throw a bone to the other side. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that actually says the President of the United States has authority to actually pass legislation, executive orders.
Yeah, that's...
But every single president since George Washington has done it.
In terms of, like, illegal immigration, like, on this level,
yep.
If you were to do, like, a survey on the national level, I'm sure it wouldn't be... It would be, like, 40-60%. Like, 40 would be, like, against it. And then the other 60% would probably say... They're up for it. On that level, I think. Like, I heard one time, like, it needs to be, like, 90% if you're to kind of pass this through. So it's kind of just on, it's more of, like, emergency powers on that level. Like, it kind of goes past that, right?
Well, that is the justification and rationale that the Trump administration used to basically... pushing enforcement to the actual letter of the law. They're claiming it's a national emergency.
Yeah.
And again, that issue is working its way through the courts. But to my knowledge, every time it's at least partial questions have gotten to the Supreme Court level, the Supreme Court has deferred to the executive branch. So it is what it is. But yeah, it's complicated. But you're right. I think the vast majority of people want the laws enforced. I think the vast majority of people would not want innocent people getting round up if they were here peacefully, regardless of what the law said. But I think the vast majority of people would also be in agreement that it's not a bad idea to get out the criminal element that is also embedded in the illegal immigration.
So something like this can't be handed to the states? It had to be done at the federal.
It's federal because immigration is a federal question.
Okay.
Going back to the Civil War, the United States government in the Reconstruction Amendments took control of all immigration policy. Because immigration used to be a matter of the states.
So that's why Mary Lou was in trouble for what she was doing.
Yes.
Why have there been instances of, like, ICE raids on, like, people going to their court gates to get their papers? Like, if we want people here legally, why are we preventing them from getting here doing the legal process? Like, that just seems...
Because they probably have an outstanding warrant.
Like, for what?
So if they're going to an agency, they could have a warrant because maybe they needed to report to a court previously, and they didn't do it. So thus, they are committing another felony.
Wouldn't they need to be citizens to have to report to a court?
No, the way our system is devised, that if you are coming here claiming that you are under duress and you are seeking asylum, under our laws, they are supposed to be processed. But the problem is what Biden did when he was president, he basically rubber stamped to expedite the process to get as many people as they were in, and they were all told to report at some time. But there's such a backlog on the immigration courts that it could be 10, 15, 20 years before someone who came in 5 years ago is actually due to sign up. But from what I've heard and what I've read, the people that are being targeted are people that already have warrants out because they failed to report.
Well, that was kind of going to be my next question. Is isn't that kind of unfair if we have one presidency that switches over and automatically switches the rulings, per se, of how to become a legal immigrant?
Yes, 100%. But the problem is that nobody held the previous administration accountable for undoing the process that every one of his predecessors had done.
on an enforcement level, though, like, so, like, yes, like, maybe Biden did some things and changed some things, but if he, like, created valid pathways of citizenship...
He didn't. He basically said we're just not going to enforce laws that are on the books.
Okay, well, there are people who have obtained legal citizenship through ways that Biden has implemented that are now being persecuted by the Trump administration. So as a completely nonpartisan question, how does that, like, get, like, again, like, going back to, isn't that kind of unfair to
if
persecute them as illegal immigrants?
The law was not valid. If the law was not on valid, if it was done through executive order, which Biden did not have the authority to do, then... Once the issue gets to the courts potentially could declare that act to be unconstitutional or null, which will completely invalidate the status of that citizen.
And then they're...
Validate, rather.
Right,
invalidate.
So then they're persecuted as if they...
No, they're treated as what they were. They broke the law when they came into the United States.
That's a civil offense, not a federal offense.
It's still a crime.
Like, there's, like, a huge difference between how someone is treated for petty theft...
It's still a crime.
It's still a crime. They don't have a right to commit a crime.
My question is, why isn't...
We're never going to get to, like, what's going on in parks, I can tell. But that's fine. I know this is what's, you know, what's going on.
My question is just, why isn't there almost, like, a grandfather law that fathers them into it?
No.
If they've already been let in and told to do the legal process...
It can be completely undone. The government controls its rule-making process.
Yes, yeah, so the rule is completely undone. That makes sense of going forward.
But if the rule was not valid to begin with, that's what I said. That's the path that the Trump administration is currently pursuing in the federal courts. They're going to try to get a court to declare that Biden's executive orders were invalid on their face.
Okay.
And if that occurs, that means everything that came after that invalid, unconstitutional act will be invalidated.
Right, and I get that. I think my question is a lot of, like...
I don't want to talk it anymore. I'm just going to let her finish her question. We got to move on.
The logical through line being used for a lot of this is, like, they are committing a crime, even if they haven't committed a crime. Being here legally is the crime that they're being persecuted for. So following that logic, a lot of these people, if at the time they did it, and I completely understand what you're saying, right? Like, the whole chain is invalid now. But maybe they shouldn't be, like, grandfathered into it, but why are they then persecuted as if they had, like, knowingly committed a crime, even though at the time it was a legal act, they did it legal ways? Like, yes, of course, that's invalid.
To my knowledge, there has not been a single illegal immigrant that was just minding their own business, living their lives, that have gotten caught. Unless they were in and around the area where there were criminal illegal immigrants. So they were swept up in a sting. Like when you go fishing, when the fishermen get our fish for our fish sandwiches, they don't cast a single line, they cast a net. So anyone, as far as I know, because I've been paying attention to it, anyone who gets caught up in the net, they may be detained in custody, but their situation is reviewed, and if they're determined not to have violent offenses in their history, they're let go. But if they are determined to have violent instances in their history, because our administration is contacting the other countries, then that's going to result in their detainment.
Because you can't run from your past. We have those standards established under treaties. All right. I think we've talked about politics very well, very well. And again, I'm not trying to lose patience. I apologize if I'm raising my voice. But again, I appreciate the fact that you're interested in those individual examples, but I'm just trying to give you examples. That's all it is. And again, I always remember I'm never saying what's right and what's wrong, because what my opinion is what's right and what's wrong is just my politics. And I appreciate you have your own opinion, and that's your politics. All I'm trying to do is just telling you the way it is. And I'm not saying I agree with the way it is. It's just the way it is. All right. Every single culture that has ever existed, every single civilization that has ever existed, have had politics. And often, politics derive from what is referred to as political culture. Political culture are the beliefs, the values, the attitudes that help shape a society. Now, does every member of that society subscribe to it? No. But ultimately, there are general tenets that can be appreciated by the majority of the people. These cultural factors define, to use an example that was referenced a few minutes ago, constitutional interpretation. Because the thing about culture is it's not static. It's not entrenched in concrete. It always flows. It changes. It evolves. Things that were once cool are now taboo. And at some point, things perceived to be taboo will become cool again. Always remember, politics is a pendulum. So, for example, a community may value the idea of free speech. But the moment you use that free speech to criticize someone held in high regard, suddenly that idea of free speech goes away. And it's censored, and it's targeted. Give me a quick one. I'll let you go, my friend.
Give me a quick example.
You give the example.
I was just wondering because, recently we had a, Donald Trump showed up to a restaurant, and there were protesters at the restaurant who protested him dining there. Speaking of the all genocide in Gaza and all sorts of things. My question is, I believe that they were arrested after that. How was that infringing on anybody's safety or anything like that for them to be arrested?
I can guarantee you that they were not arrested for the words that they were saying. I can guarantee you they did something that went against whatever the rules that the secret society established on the scene. Maybe there was a perimeter that they were not allowed to cross. Maybe, because let's be honest, activists have issues with following the rules because they're passionate about what they're protesting or they're for. So sometimes people let the emotions get the best of them, and so maybe they bumped into a secret serviceman. We don't know.
I think it's actually a great example of what you're just talking about like if you use your free speech to talk about someone who's held in high regard, it goes out the window, right? Like I think that was just I saw the video too. And they were.
So I don't know what you're talking about. But.
Yeah, he walked up to them and literally was like smiling at them and being like, and then they were like taken out. So
well, you know,
I think he was just like annoyed, which is valid.
The thing that I've observed in Trump is he really doesn't care what anybody says. But I can guarantee you the reason why they were taken out is because they did something that was not seen on the video.
Yes, I understand, but isn't that in itself of Trump not caring about what people think of him? The reason why. Why is he in politics if he doesn't care what people think of him? Isn't that kind of what the idea of politics is?
Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the idea of representation. Because truth be told, most people in politics don't care what anyone thinks. They have their own agendas, and that's what they got
to
push.
But if they want popularity, they have to.
No, they don't. All they need to do is pick the right social issues that get them just enough popularity with enough groups to get 50% plus one.
Donald Trump is masterful at that.
He's a master at that. Exactly.
Like, says exactly.
He is the most brilliant political person that I've seen in my lifetime.
He's a master at saying the right thing to the right social issues to the right people.
Oh, yeah. He knows what the issues are. He pushes the buttons, and that's how he won this time around. Got a majority of the vote. All right, so culture, values, again, that's the messy thing, because I hate to break it to you, there are very, very, very few people in this world that actually live to the black and white letter of the law. That's a tough way to live. That's a stoic existence, and very few people have the means to do so. Because you know when someone's politics change? The moment it impacts them. The moment it comes into your world. then politics change. Whatever you were for before doesn't matter.
But, again, remember, it's fluid. So, when you look back in history, you will see things that were popular politically in the United States. For instance, how many of you knew that in 1937, when the immigration department in Germany was handed over to the SS, making it nearly impossible for any Jew to leave Germany, how many of you knew that when there was a group of Jews that managed to get out, got on a boat, sailed to the United States Navy turned them around? And thereafter, we put in place that under federal law, we would only allow something like 32,000 Jews per year. They could apply.
Did they do it with all races?
Global. No, no. It was just, the number was about 32,000 just Jews.
I'm pretty sure they had like limits for every.
Yeah.
They did. They did. But I'm using this as an example. So people were starting to kind of realize what was going on in Germany. But the people of the United States did not care, including the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So, not that we are responsible for the Holocaust, but we didn't do everything we could to help those people out. Because there were many people, and by the way, there are still many people in our country today that do not like Jews.
So we didn't see them as refugees?
Nope. Identified them as Jews and kind of said, no, we don't want them.
You know the tough part is? In order to apply, you actually had to get here. Well, to get leave Germany, you had to get on a boat or a train. Then you had to get on a boat to come here. How many of those 32,000 that were allowed per year do you think actually got here?
Very few.
Very few. So it's an irony.
But yet today, the United States is one of the biggest supporters of Israel.
Times have changed. Israel doesn't have oil.
Palestine.
Not that I know of.
Question back?
I was gonna bring up Palestine, but not that. And I was just gonna ask about the fact of like, are we kind of doing the same thing that we did to Jewish people in the Holocaust that we are to the genocides that are happening right now with the immigrants?
No, because the Jews that were genocided in Germany were actually German citizens. They killed their own.
Yes, but we're not accepting as many refugees.
Well, no. What's going on is the current administration is not believing the basis for their claim. So the Biden administration would let someone in claiming, oh, I didn't have a job and make enough money, so I need, you know, protective status. Current administration is enforcing the law because under federal law, that's not sufficient. You actually have to prove that the government was trying to kill you in order to qualify.
So, not really. I understand the connection, but it's just very, 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 very remote. All right. Link to history. Oh, religion also plays a part.
The religion of the majority of the people ultimately defines the culture. So, cultural norms in, say, Saudi Arabia are very different than cultural norms in China, which is also very different than cultural norms in, say, Sweden. Why? Well, ultimately, a nation's politics have been shaped by the experiences that those people have had over the centuries and decades. Yes?
There are sources that say that Palestine does have a lot of oil, especially in the Levant Basin.
I know nothing about that. So I'm not going to disagree. I'm just going to say I don't know. But that has nothing to do with it.
The war?
Yes.
Learn about the history of what's been going on in that country since it was created.
Yes.
And you have an administration now that's in there that's determined to finish it.
Like,
okay. One's culture serves as its unwritten history.
So, what should the government do? Well, a government can not really go too far beyond what the people will tolerate. Because ultimately, even in those countries where there are not elections or free societies, the governments realize ultimately they're bound to their own culture. Because if not, that could give rise to revolution. So, for instance, in Saudi Arabia, I think we all know that women are not really fully protected under the law to the same degree that they are in our country. Why does the Saudi government not do so? Well, Islamic culture. The laws, the rules, the traditions of the faith basically view women as the property of their husbands. Whereas in many Western Christian cultures,
they also view women as the property of their husbands, like the Bible.
Well, I was going to say, women in Christian cultures today are definitely treated way more better, way more respectful. And if it wasn't for Christianity and the Christians that pushed for women's suffrage, women in our country would have never had the right to vote.
Women used to have the right to vote in Iran. And then the United States toppled their government and took it away.
We didn't topple their government. It was a result. We did not fund the Ayatollahs seizing power. The Ayatollahs seized power going back to religious issues that were in that country for hundreds of years, where the extreme Shia, yeah, they're not Shiites. They're Shia religiosity, which goes back to a regime that ruled there in the 15th century, basically toppled civil government and demanded that Sharia law, what?
With U.S. funding.
It was not done with U.S. funding.
Sure it was.
No, it was not. We were an ally with the Shah against the Cold War. I can't. I'm done today. We'll call it a class. I need your topics by tomorrow. Please send me an email.